requires a bit of imagination and flexibility about how we recondition people. I think that's what's been happening here. People have lost condition. But I thought I'd start first of all by explaining a little bit about rehab. I appreciate some of you may know a bit about it, but Tim said to still describe it anyway. I'm the chair of the Rehabilitation Workers Professional Network. That's the professional body for vision rehabilitation workers. So, although there's no comparison in size and importance, I suppose, if you think of the GMC for doctors or the Nursing and Midwifery Council for nurses, lots of professional bodies exist for their professional grouping. And our role is to look at standards, to unify members and to support them, and to, in situations where we need to issue guidelines. So for instance, during COVID, there was a lot of uncertainty about when rehab workers could go and do visits or how they could circumvent visits and do their work in other ways. And so RWPN put together some guidelines based on the government guidelines for rehab workers, how they might intervene through various considerations, like the length of a visit or where the visit might take place, the circumstances in which a visit might take place, or how you'd liaise on the phone and do it differently there. But obviously for some people, doing stuff on the phone is not a great idea, particularly if you're deafblind. So that's the kind of thing that we've done as an organisation during lockdown. And I'll come back to something later on, but we're looking at how people retain condition as well, fitness. So for those who are not so sure, I'll explain a bit about what a rehabilitation worker does. The first thing to say is for many rehabilitation workers that you will have come across through the local authority, an assessment of need is a statutory requirement, is a statutory duty. So there's a legal statute for people to receive assessment. And rehabilitation, whilst not explicitly stated as a statutory requirement of anything, is in a way, it's built into the Care Act 2014. So if there is a need to prevent delay, to prevent any care going in or delay care going in, rehabilitation is a statutory provision in that sense. And so we would argue, as I'm sure you would, if someone's losing their sight, they don't want care going in. They don't want someone coming and doing stuff for them necessarily. They'd like to be able to regain the confidence to do that. So that is the basis on which rehabilitation has a statutory footing in the law. And it comes after an assessment. So those are entitlements. And I think we should hang on to that, because getting access to rehabilitation workers, it's hard work. There are not many of us. There are around about 450 to 500 in the country. And we're, I have to say, very pressured. That doesn't negate the right of someone to have an assessment and have rehabilitation. That's the problem for local authorities to deal with when they get that pressure. So there are core skills that a rehabilitation worker has. But in a way, that's putting the cart before the horse. If someone is losing their sight, the assessment is there to highlight what that person's strengths are, what they're really good at, and what they are losing confidence in. And it may be, to take some more common examples, like reading or struggling with reading or having problems in the kitchen, cooking safely, or whatever. If that's the desired need of someone to be able to do that, maybe because they're looking after children, they're a visually impaired parent looking after children, or because they're looking after their husband or wife. That's the need. The need for rehabilitation might be to gain confidence in doing those things in the kitchen. So that's the kind of skill that a rehabilitation worker might bring to bear. We are supposed to be purveyors of information and advice, but also training. I think that a rehabilitation worker goes on a 2-year course, and so it's a requirement of the job that you have the qualification to do this. And so part of that is how you train someone. So as Tim mentioned earlier about technology, it's very useful for someone to know what technology is out there. It's, you know, someone says, I'm struggling using the phone now. We would, as would any tech person at a voluntary agency, say, well, there's a range of things for phones here. There's a Doro phone, there's a Synaptic smartphone, or you could use your apps on an iPhone or whatever, on Android. But then there's the element of teaching that. So it's one thing to say there's this out there, and then there's the next bit is how you teach that. And that's requires a knowing how someone operates, their way of being. If you're someone's quite tech phobic, you would probably not necessarily plow in with a Synaptic phone as your first idea. You might want to look at something else that might be more familiar to them. But then again, they may be really up for trying something new, so you wouldn't rule it out. The theme of this discussion is around mobility. So what a rehab worker trained in their 2 years is in orientation and mobility techniques. And that's commonly associated with the long cane. I suppose the reason that it's, you know, you can buy a long cane from the RNIB, that's not disputed. I think that a long cane is just a piece of flimsy metal that prods out in front of you. There are techniques to how you use it and what it can tell you. And a cane is little use without orientation skills, knowing where you are in the built environment, using what vision you've got, plus other sound clues, sensory clues, and using the cane, if you do choose to use a cane, to enhance your orientation. So it's building up confidence. It's obviously it's avoiding obstacles, but it's also about how you orientation and mobility skills include how you gain the confidence to get help, how you use a phone when you're out and about. If you've got off the bus at the wrong stop, what do you do next? That can be really disconcerting. So it might be a question of how good are you going up to a stranger and saying, can you tell me where I am, please? Or how vulnerable do you feel doing that? Some people feel very vulnerable using a long cane or even a simple cane. So there's a task there to persuade someone the value of a cane. And if they don't really want to use a cane, if that person chooses not to, that's fine. So you'd have to look at other ways of doing it. And now there are technological advances, which I'm sure we're all, for those of you who use sat navs in the car, there are apps you can get on your phone which are orientation apps, and those are becoming increasingly into practice. I think this raises an interesting issue for rehab workers, because I was trained in the 2000s and these things weren't as available then, if at all. And so a lot of rehab workers come to this late in the day and I think are a little nervous about it, particularly in the teaching of it. Rehab workers who come out of the training centre now do these things much more as a matter of course. It's part of what they're trained. So I think it's fantastic that local voluntary organisations have tech stuff going on, because sometimes the Robies don't have some of the skills under their belt that they would like to. I think that's fair to say. And maybe Simon can comment later on, because he will see this a lot through Henshaw's. You know, how confident is the worker in delivering their skills? But that's why, as a professional body, we require members to do continued professional development. When you qualify from somewhere, you wouldn't expect a doctor to not learn up on new things around diagnosis or identification or treatments. You'd expect them to know. So I think you should expect rehab workers to keep up to date with what's out there. Sometimes it's hard to get training to be able to teach those things. That's a separate issue. But always to keep up to date. And so that's why there's a professional body to try and say, this is what you need to be getting on with. Please, for your client's sake, keep up to date. So I think I'll say before I go on to other stuff, a bit about referring into rehab services. It's really hard work. Where you are coming from geographically, I'm sure there aren't enough. It's a given, and I know that's the case in Cumbria. And when you refer into a service, often local authorities have a screening process. Well, they will have a screening process, that's for sure. It's, some areas, that's screened by the visual impairment team themselves. So I'm very lucky in Bradford, we screen the calls that come in. And so we have people who are allegedly experts at taking the referrals and asking the right questions. But in many areas, it's done by a local, they wouldn't call it a call centre, but it's effectively a call centre. The training people have is very generic because they have a lot of skills they have to have some understanding of. But if, for instance, a screening call centre gets the CVIs, the Certificates of Vision Impairment, when you see a CVI, there are various things on that CVI that stand out to someone who knows what it means. You know, there's a box for dual sensory, if there's a hearing impairment as well. There are things around the different eye conditions. And you know, if someone's got wet macular disease, that would imply a potentially quite a degree of sight loss by the time it gets to registration and could be quite rapid sight loss. And that affects the way that you handle the call and the way you talk to someone. And the information you have builds into the conversation that you have with the person at the end of the phone. And unless the person at the end of the phone who's going through the situation knows their voice, knows what it is they're asking for, they may well get screened out. So rehabilitation is not widely known in social services. It is, and that's true of, it's not just true of visual impairment rehabilitation, it's true of lots of things. Why, so they, screeners can't know everything. But unless you say something like, I'm really having trouble getting out and about, I would like some mobility training, please. And the person says, well, what's that then? They say, well, I've heard about it. It's where you might use a white cane. I mean, the chances, I mean, most people aren't this articulate because they don't have the knowledge to do this, but that's the kind of thing that's at least going to get the call center person thinking, oh, hang on a mo, what's that then? Because otherwise they'll just say, how are you doing with your sight? And people are very, oh, I'm all right. It's a bit of a problem, but I'm all right. Okay, fine. And that's where things get screened out. And I don't know how common this sounds to you, but believe me, I think it's very common. And the reason sometimes people don't, there aren't enough rehab workers is people don't know there's a demand for it. It's a theoretical demand. We can say, oh, there are over a million people in the United Kingdom who have serious sight loss. But until a service gets lots of requests for it, that's not reality to them. So I'm sounds like I'm advocating you persist with your local authority. Bearing in mind, though, that just puts more pressure on the few rehab workers there are. So I'm very conscious that if it's a rehab worker listening to this, they'd say, oh, thanks very much, but that's just more pressure on us. So that's the dilemma. That's the dilemma.
Okay. Yeah, so to give some science advice. Yeah, we have... I know exactly what you mean. Just for people listening.
Just to mute that.
Yeah. Hello. But can you hear me? Yeah. We would never ask people to go directly to the Rovi because A, that's unfair, and B, may not get recorded. We'd always go via the call centre thing for two reasons, really. One, we actually know how to make the referral, as Simon says. They are trying. There can be a screening out process if you don't give the correct information. And also, the other thing is need. If there is a need for a Rovi and it's not being met, there will be a footprint in the local authority system. So we always advocate, we will happily make the referral for you. Don't go direct to the Rovi because it's unfair, because it's not how that Rovi can manage the workload.
Okay.
So, yeah, unless you know the person, of course, and are a customer, that's entirely different. But I know exactly what you mean. You can get screened out very easily, Simon.
Yeah. So persistence is required. And, you know, in the end, there are other methods into the system. You know, you have local councillors if you're really not getting a service. and talking to a manager may be helpful. There are fewer services these days where there's a sensory team involved. Yeah. Essex, you have a whole, you know, Essex Care system in itself, so that's a fortunate situation. But I'm not sure there's still a sensory team as such in Worcestershire, for instance, because they tend to get managed. So Rovies have become more managed by occupational therapists or social workers now. So that's the bit I wanted to say about what rehab work is and stuff like that. It's very clear that people have lost condition over lockdown. And so people who were very confident getting out and about are less confident now. Things, not just because things have changed in the built environment, but people have been indoors for a long time and muscle tone goes, bone density starts to suffer. And so I was working with a gentleman the other day and I hadn't seen him for quite a while and I was shocked. We walked to the bus stop, which was 200 metres, and he almost couldn't get back. And I felt really, that put me into a hell of a position actually, because I thought, actually, I'm stranded here. He's stranded here. I'm not sure how to get back. I had underestimated, and this is to my blame really, just how much he was out of shape. And he didn't realise he was either, because it's something we'd done regularly beforehand, but could no longer do. We're looking at guidance at the moment for rehab workers in how they might incorporate strength and balance exercises into their work. It's not something that we would normally do, but I would argue that if someone saying they want to get out and they have sight problems doing that, to stop them doing that, if they physically can't get very far because of they are out of shape, then I don't think we can walk away, to coin a phrase, really. I think there's a role for us there in looking at how people move around, physically move around, not like a physio. I'm not saying that at all, because if someone has a physical condition where they need help, that's a different story. But if it's someone who's just been sitting down for a long period of time, they need support and advice on how to regain strength, to become mobile, to get outdoors, to go to the post office. Simon's involved in a project in Manchester at the moment, looking at confidence building on routes that people already know. You might want to say something about that later on. Simon, do you want to say anything?
Yeah, I'll chip in later on. Yeah.
Okay. And then we've had all this confusion around, well, not confusion, but site guiding and what you're allowed to do. I have a sneaking suspicion this is all slightly academic when the Prime Minister's telling us as of Monday, when is it Monday, we can hug each other again. So if we can hug each other, I presume we can site guide someone. Yeah. But you know, nevertheless, there are still things we have to do. And I think there's advice on the RNIB website in the same way that we provided guidance around to rehab workers about how they operate in COVID times, you know, limiting the amount of time you're guiding someone, checking that if they're vaccinated, that's helpful, wearing a face mask, that is still important. How long you do it for, better outdoors than in, all these kind of things, because if you have to do something indoors, keep the ventilation coming through. You know, there are things that we can all do just as ordinary people, not talking about rehab workers here, with site guiding. And when you're out and about, if you're doing a rambling group over rough terrain, I don't see how you can do it any other way. But you are, I think a degree of common sense surely comes in here. You are if you're in Cumbria, you're not exactly in still air, are you? It's breezy, it's outdoors, and you just, at that point, it's a kind of a balance of risks. There are positive risks from getting out that are probably at that point going to offset any risk of COVID contagion. That's for a risk assessment, isn't it? But I think positive risk taking isn't about doing skydiving. Positive risk taking is looking at the benefits of something. And are they bigger than the risks? Which is what rehab workers do all the time as part of their job. But I think we all do it to some extent, but don't always write it down. So yes, I think that's what I wanted to say just generally, and I'm open to comment. Maybe Simon, do you want to come in here and just say what your project's been about, because it's interesting.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. I was only going to listen to this, but I seem to have managed to get involved. Some of you probably know me from some of the Henshaw's Knowledge Village videos with Mark. But we started way back last summer. We identified from lots of people we got feedback from that people had lost confidence. As Simon was just saying, people have also lost stamina. They've lost all sorts of things. So we started a sort of like a top tips thing last summer to sort of get people engaging in thinking about if lockdown happens or unlockdown happens, and maybe the person you live with goes back to work. Maybe you've got to start preparing your own meals again. Lots of simple things that people possibly had crept up on them they hadn't realised. As for the stamina thing, we started suggesting that people, if they had a garden, they started trying to get a bit of exercise in the garden. We did some exercise videos, and we really tried to get people to engage with thinking about what would change for them when possibly the people they live with went back to work or they could go out. So that was one thing we started to get people to think about. And then we found that we had some people who actually had lost the confidence to even go beyond the front gate. We've had lots of people who just didn't want to leave the front door. And I think everybody on this call will probably understand the issue of the knot in the stomach behind the front door before someone with sight loss travels. It's a fear factor thing anyhow. But that had just become really big for people. And we've actually had people who couldn't get to the gate. So with much ado and much planning and careful planning and all the rest of it, we have got some of our enablers going and just accompanying people to do a short walk. You know, they've got to have done this walk before. It's, you know, it's got to be something they've already travelled and done. They've just purely lost confidence. So that's something we've started to do. It's only on a small scale, but it just for those people, it's either that or a 2-year wait for maybe a rehabilitation officer to come out, which it's a long while to wait to be able to go back to the spa shop you used to shop at. So that's something we've tried to do. It's working really well. And again, I was out with an enabler last week. They come back to me with some concerns, and the lady wasn't physically able to do the walk. And ironically, when we got there and, you know, we soon identified, the lady actually said, I know I'm not. It had come to dawn on her that she actually couldn't physically do the walk, never mind with the sight loss. So there's lots of factors involved. Just to echo something Simon said before, though, I met a gentleman in the centre of Manchester that I've known for years. I have got some sight loss, but I just didn't recognise him. But neither did my PA, who does me spotting. He'd grown a full beard. He was 6 inches shorter, his stature, his posture, everything had changed. And from a man who was hiking and walking, he'd a job to get to the bank. You know, it was a real shock to me to see somebody who had done martial arts, yoga, you name it, and this was where this had got the guy to. Again, the bank, he wanted to go to the bank. He just didn't know what would happen in the bank. What's the system? I've heard you've got to go in one door and out of another. So really simple things we're just trying to help people with. And the other thing about apps and rehabilitation workers, we've got a bit of a principle here at Henshaw's, and the phones and things are really intuitive. You know, you don't get instructions with them. If we can get people using the actual accessibility features, they can pretty much get to grip with the app, because the app's, you know, it's self-learning. Things work really well for people. And I'll never forget the first time I ever got somebody going with CNAI, and she said to me, this means I can have whatever flavour crisps I want whenever. And the choice for that person to be able to pick salt and vinegar or cheese and onion, I know it sounds trivial, but actually that was like a moment for that lady where life changed completely. She wanted the session finished because she wanted to go home to sort her kitchen cupboards out because she was sick of how her husband did it. So that's the benefit of getting on board with apps. And it does sadden me sometimes when I see messages on forums saying, I'm a rehabilitation officer, what map should I use for, or, you know, what sort of maps should I be using? Really, we should have all been using maps 5 years ago. So that's my perspective on it. And I think between us, Mark, myself, and hopefully Simon, we're trying to get some more apps into more rehabilitation officers' heads. And our Knowledge Village is always there for people who want to learn some of these apps without having to do a lot of work as well. So I'll leave it there, I think.
Yes, the Knowledge Village is a very good resource. And I think what Simon's been talking about is there's a tension. I think it's maybe hard for non-rehab workers to understand, because we're talking about a situation where people have lost skills that is pretty cataclysmic for them in terms of how you feel about yourself as well. Rehab workers have they've got certain boundaries. And so they can sometimes come across as quite precious about things. And I think there is good reason behind that, because they're trained to do things in a certain way. And if they're found to be negligent, the consequences are quite steep. So, and that's as you'd expect. Again, that's what registration as professionals is about. But I think there's a need to show understanding and flexibility about situations. And we've got an unprecedented situation here. But I think neither of us can guarantee how other rehab workers will react to those kind of propositions put to them. But I think it requires a degree of inventiveness and working in partnership with, in this case, the voluntary agencies.
Simon, can I just come in? There's a couple of points between the pair of you, really. And I think the thing that I hadn't really thought about much of today is it's a conditioning thing. Because we have Sheila on the call, who were running a walking group. Obviously, we're very interested in the sighted guiding bit, which I think you've probably nailed. If you can hug, I'm pretty sure you can sight guide. And that was a good one to hear, because, yeah, you just make that leap, don't you? You have to use the government guidelines to your situation, because they're not going to come out with a guideline about sighted guiding, probably, at this stage. But the conditioning was very interesting, because obviously, we're Cumbria. We have a very, very good walking group, you know, who do some pretty good walks sometimes. And of course, we've no idea about people's condition now, do we? People's condition would have changed from the previous walk, which would have been a month previously, to sort of 12 months out of the game, if you like. So, yeah. What kind of tips have you got on this?
I would urge, if the group's got a... But maybe they've already done this, but I would start small, and at the risk of cheesing off some people who like a really good long hike, couching in terms of everyone's, you know, needs to get back together for the benefit of the whole group. It's a communal exercise after all, and keeping it, lower demands on stamina rather than anything else, because, you know, particularly if it's uneven and you've got to concentrate a lot, or you don't have good sight, your concentration levels are quite high, and then there's the physical burden of lots of uphill. So keeping it, weaning people back into something, and maybe for those who really want something else, offering something else if that's possible, because you would be surprised how much, you know, the breathing gets affected. And if also lack of stimulation, mental stimulation, is a downside of all this. You feel isolated. You're not the same person. Your conversational abilities have been atrophied as well. You just need a chance to open up a bit of gentle conversation. And sometimes if you're striding all over the place, that's quite hard work. You maybe just want to chat a bit as well as walk.
I'm going to remove your spotlight, Simon, so I can see who wants to talk. We're going into the gallery view now, people. So thank you for that. I'll have while we're doing this, in 2 weeks' time, Simon mentioned about the app thing. Strangely enough, our next session, one part of that is how to use apps to sort of barcode your cheese and onion, salt, vinegar, crisp and baked beans. So we're going to show a method of doing that using apps. So, okay, here we go then. Gallery time. Everybody in their gallery view now? I don't know if they are. So, has anybody got any questions for yes, Aileen?
Yeah, thank you, Tim. Simon, when you picked up on the issue of stamina, we, as a small charity, one of the main interests and sources of income we have is our street collections. we've not been able to do that, and we've tried to do, you know, many things online, some very successfully, but with a number of people who are really keen to get back out there. And I'm just thinking about we need to look at the risk assessments, etc. But I'm also considering the thing of stamina, because, you know, these are people who will say to me, I'm absolutely fine, just leave me to it for 2 hours. I'm beginning to think, right, I need to think about this differently. It may be that I can leave you to it for an hour, or it may be that you need a seat. Is there anything else that I'd need to consider from that angle?
I have these people had any experience of doing any, door to door as a kind of process is pretty been stamped out, apart from if you're a COVID tester. Any briefing on how people might be received at the doorstep?
Where somebody goes as a representative of the charity with clearly marked gear on them to say that they're part of Site Advice, and they simply have a collection tin or collection bucket, and they stand in a static or sit in a static position.
Yeah, I don't think anything else comes to mind particularly. I don't know what advice you might offer to someone who comes up to them who is unmasked and is a bit close for comfort. But that can happen in lots of situations. That's the only other thing I can think of. Yeah, but I don't know what you do about that. I suppose if they have their own masks on, I would certainly keep their masks on for that job.
Can I just add one thing about the stamina? The biggest problem I've come across with stamina when I've been working with people is the person doesn't realise how poor the stamina has become themselves. It happened to me. I was just trying to lift my garden bin over the wall, and I was really shocked. And I've found that people know the stamina has suffered, but not to the extent it's suffered. Mm-hmm. And it's that almost, do you really prescribe a shorter session for everybody regardless, instead of that awkward session, you know, that awkward conversation?
Yeah, it is. And I don't think people make a lot of connection, even when I train as a rear worker, about how your muscles work and how your bones. Now, if you've ever been in hospital for more than a week, your bone density has shrunk massively, over 50% or something. So, and it takes, and that's a slow process to get back up. So,
All right, thank you. Yeah, this is strange enough turning to a different conversation. It's like Simon was invited to talk about, hey, let's get out. But actually, there's a stage before that. Some people are not, may not. I mean, some people are ready to go out, of course they are. But there may be a whole bunch of people who we know and work with who actually may not be ready to go out. And it's, how do we explain? I mean, conditioning is the first time I've actually heard that term used in this sort of setting. You know, people have talked about health and fitness and et cetera, in the sight loss community. But the word conditioning is something that we've not really picked up on. I haven't picked up on at all. And maybe that's something the horse before the cart, really, isn't it? The cart is going out, but the horse can't draw it.
Yeah, and I suppose it's what are the warning signs when people say, oh, I won't be coming in to see you? I suppose because you're not open anyway, necessarily, as much as you might have been. But people have fewer reasons to go out. So what is it you pick up in a conversation with someone that indicates that's a risk there? And whether, I think in the way that Simon's pointed towards in Manchester, there's a role for volunteers in just walking down the garden path. I mean, I wouldn't go advertising it as walking down the garden path. It's just about having a chat on your doorstep and, oh, show me your flowers or something, or, you know, come down to the front gate. It's how you bill it, really, isn't it?
There's a bit of confidence building as well in that, isn't there? Without sort of being patronising at the same time. I know it's a line you have to walk, isn't it? But yeah. Okay, thank you. I can see everybody. Liz Lanigan, I can see you with your hand up.
Hello, Simon. I'm part of the walking group that Sheila runs, and I have been a guide for so many years, I can't remember how many. We take some partially sighted and some totally non-sighted people out for a walk once a month. we start off with a guide doing a one-to-one with a client. Halfway through the walk, we will stop and swap over, change guides, simply because it's a different conversation for the client. And also, some of them do drag rather heavy on your arm sometimes, so it can be a bit stressful that way. So is there any reason why we can't continue doing that, or is it safer just to have one guide?
No, I mean, the strict thing is have one guide, but I really don't think that's the reason for the group to exist. I mean, you've just said about having a change of conversation. Again, it's a balanced risk. It's a much richer experience to have, and maybe that the person you're with isn't the person you really want to talk to, and so swapping around is such a nice thing to do. Interesting you raise the whole thing about drag on the guiding and why that might be, and you know, you that's raised the whole issue for volunteers about how they feel about, you know, often we get this with daughters being dragged on by their dads or whatever, you know, and it sometimes points the way towards something not quite right with the visually impaired person, whether it's just their balance or their lack of security. I mean, this is a side issue. This may not apply now, but I wonder how many people use canes when they're out, not in the full sense to sweep and to cover stuff, but do people take canes on these walks as a kind of extra, like a shepherd's crook type thing?
The people that have no sight don't usually take canes. I don't know, Sheila might know better than me how many people do.
Sorry, Liz. I would say...
You're on, Sheila.
I would say that there is maybe three that would use a cane occasionally. But it is, I would say that everyone that we take, we are maybe an average age of, say, and please forgive me, but maybe 60 to 70, question mark. So none of us spring chickens. And also the guides, you know, we are fit, or we were fit, but, you know, we maybe need some assistance as well. So therefore, if anybody is sort of hanging on a little bit, you know, we physically may not be able to support them. But it is this sort of close contact with people I'm concerned about. There's no way we can go out without being in very close contact. You know, either them touching our elbow, which is the correct way, or whether they link in with the arm. So that is a concern, and I am conscious of the insurance, and I think we have to be guided by the local office and the site advice as to what we can do.
Just taking that, so I imagine there's some sort of risk assessment or mitigation steps that you've documented. I mean, maybe with, you know, sanitising hands or using wipes and things for the crook of someone's elbow.
Yes. Yes, we can do that. But I was wondering, I do take on board about the confidence thing, and I think that applies to both the guides and the visually impaired. So I think we need to take nursery steps and maybe arrange just a meeting, a picnic, which would involve us taking them in the cars and then stopping and literally not walking very far, maybe 10 minutes, just to assess what everybody's needs are. And a lot of the walking group, the point of the walking group is very social. You know, all become very close. The guides, we've all made friends with each other because we didn't know each other. And the same with the visually impaired. So I think that's just as important, the conversation, social side of things, as well as the walking. So maybe we can do the social side first, build people's confidence up, and then decide on how far people want to walk. But we don't really walk more than, say, 4 miles, and it's always flat, as flat as can be in Cumbria. So we're not fells. You know, we may be walking on the canal, and talking about what we can see and what we can hear. And it's just a shame that we're missing out on all the bird song and the flowers at the moment. But I'm ready to go. I'm ready to embrace this if I'm allowed to do that.
Yeah. I'll second that.
Yeah, where we are at the moment, I mean, we haven't quite locked down for volunteers, Sheila, but for the staff, because we are doing home visits now, and the offices, like Low Vision Clinic, starts next week, for example, where we are, the staff are all double jabbed. That's the point. That's tick one. Yeah. And we do two lateral flow tests a week. That's tick two. Mm. That's pretty well it. You know, I'd imagine a similar criteria would be applied, you know, to volunteers and activities as well, if you're having contact with other people. And in Cumbria, I mean, most people, you know, as you say, we are a certain age, a lot of us, Sheila. we went on, most of us have that second jab, you know. And I think we have to have a 3-week gap between the second jab, by the way. That's the other thing we put in. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's much more than that, other than the individual risk to the activity. But we would, you know, sit down. I'm sure Julie would sit down with you.
I'll second that. That from the from next Monday we can do it. We can go ahead. Subject to all those.
Yeah.
Provisor.
Oh, you're here, Julie. Hello.
Yeah. Sorry, I heard, and I've just been speaking to James, and the walking group is one of the first. We would love to get it up and going as soon as, you know. So as soon as all those provisos have been met about the jabs and the assessment for the walk, but, you know, let's do it. We want to do it as possible.
Julie, does that mean once you've had the second jab, is it 3 weeks after you've had the second jab that
yes.
you can go ahead?
Yeah, for face-to-face contact, yeah.
Because I know most of the walking group have had theirs. I'm getting mine on the 1st of June.
Right, so 3 weeks after that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, on the walking group, because obviously we've got people from outside the area. So yeah, okay, Sheila, you've got some nice ideas now of where we can go.
I'll be talking to Sheila because I talked to James this morning, so I will ring you, Sheila.
All right, that's lovely. Thank you. Oh yes, I've got hundreds of walks because I've been walking every day in the last 18 months. So I'm actually super fit. We've been allowed to do. Is walk.
Could I just add a little comment to the walking group, please?
Yeah,
the one thing I would possibly think about for your first couple of walks is not to do a linear walk that's all the way there and all the way back. Possibly if you were doing a walk in an area that you have seating, you could do one set route, a bit like the forest walks. You could do a set route, people could sit, people could offer a slightly longer walk. So you'd still be out for the same amount of time. You would have rest points or waypoints, whereas if you do a linear canal walk, you're all the way there and you're all the way back. So you're only as far as your least fit person. That's one thing we've sort of like considered, is having in an area like a, you know, like a national park. I know you're in a big one, but we have them slightly smaller here. But that's what we've done, you know, like around Dunham Massey and places like that. And then you can add little bits to it rather than everybody having to go home when Bob's tired.
Thanks,
Thank you.
Simon, I wonder whether I could just ask you a question. I know this is still about the walking, but it will affect other people as well. In the past, I've done quite a bit of walking with sight impaired people, and we've used walking poles held horizontally. So that's increasing the distance between the sight impaired person and the sighted guide. For walks, obviously just on easy terrain. I just wonder what you thought about that. Did the people that were using seem to be happy with it because they could still feel the movement of the body?
Yeah, so you mean held sort of like you're linked together at either end of a pole?
Yes, so instead of holding on to an elbow, you've obviously got as much.
And, there's this product called the Ramble Tag. Have you come across a Ramble Tag?
Yeah.
I suppose what the pole has got is it's rigid and you get a sense of direction off it. Okay, I haven't advocated, I haven't used it, so I don't feel I'm fit to comment. It feels quite a drastic step.
Yes, yeah.
Simon, any thoughts?
I'll say what you don't want to say. It can be a little indignant. It can become a car and trailer process.
Yeah.
Your person's quite away from you, and if you're not careful, the person then ends up being towed by you.
Yeah.
So we've just been sent a device to look at this morning that is the most bizarre thing you've ever seen. It's got two hooks, one at each end and about 6 foot in between. And it's reminiscent to me of a Harold Lloyd film where someone drives through the plate of glass while they're crossing the road, because I can see that that's what will happen with it.
What is this, Simon? What is this?
I'll share it with you. I'll send you a... You can critique it yourself, Simon. It's not something I'll be advocating anyhow. But the problem is, and the ramble tag again, and I noticed before you said people link. Linking's not really the best solution at times, because if they fall, you fall. Yeah. Then they start to add weight to you. They're having a cracking day and you're absolutely jiggered when you get in, but it's that whole process. And the reason you use your elbow is it's a direct contact, it's direct feedback. We know if we're going up, down, left, right. If you're going to put a 4 foot pole in the middle, I'm not sure. I just won't let any of our guys do that.
I want to come back to a comment that came up earlier about using a cane in your other hand. It'd be interesting to find out those in the group who do, why they do. Yes, your hand is busy. Your other hand is already occupied holding this cane. But some people find it very reassuring to know it's not going on, it's not training the ground, but it's actually kind of obstacle detection, particularly in built up areas. You know, it's partly a symbol to other people and partly it's just, it's forming an extra bit of barrier. So if you're particularly nervous or I'm wondering someone is really clinging on to you, that might be one of the reasons they have a lot of anxiety about it, and it's faith in your guide. And whether a cane in the other hand would make a difference, whether that would make them feel less, it's no guarantee it would, but it might do.
Great.
We had one lady who used to walk with us. Unfortunately, she's not with us anymore, but she always insisted on having a cane, and she used to swing her cane backwards and forwards as if she's walking on her own. And several people got a rather nasty tap on the ankle or the knee or something. So we had to very politely ask her if she would leave a cane in the car. But she wasn't very happy doing that. So we had to say, well, please don't swing it around.
Yes, so there's a compromise position there, because, I mean, if someone has no sight, it's surprising how disorientating being guided is. Mm-hmm. It's something that I think as sighted people we don't recognise, but being even on someone's elbow, you still don't really know quite where you are if you're blind, and that's why people often like to have the cane in addition, just for orientation purposes as well as defence.
Can I ask something as well, if that's okay? I'm Juji, work for Support for Sight. Simon, and thank you for everybody for your input, but unfortunately in Essex we don't have a walking group, so I can't implement all the suggestions that you've been talking about. But Simon, I'm just wondering, in your knowledge village, have you got anything that may be easy to follow, like a chair exercise or something? Because what we've been thinking about is something that's concerning me, and I can see and hear from my clients that they have lost their ability to go out, their strength and all of that. But because we don't have a walking group, is that something that people can do maybe at home in their own time? Have you got anything in your library?
On the Knowledge Village, there's chair-based warm-up and basic exercises.
Great.
And then one thing, we've just had a load of feedback in this morning. We have done chair-based yoga.
Oh, okay.
Over the Zoom, Teams or phone.
Oh, and okay.
We've also got a Keep Fit group that is operating virtually. And really strangely, and I'm not sure how this works, but a karate group.
Oh, wow. Okay.
At the end of the day, we've got quite a few things that are virtual and people are engaging with. But have a look on the Knowledge Village. There is
Are they just for your clients? Like, are they these classes? Are they just for your clients who live in your local area?
The virtual ones are for people who are going through our pathway in Greater Manchester.
Uh-huh.
And then obviously we sourced that locally through some fund, you know, someone else had some funding, you know, it is, you always need people to fit the funding as well.
Okay.
So, but then you, it's that having a look what else there is available. But the Knowledge Village things are there for everybody.
Okay, thank you. I will have a look, because, and if any of you here who are my guys here, please let me know and I can email you the link.
In addition to that, there's Metro Sports in London are a good resource. They're the ones we're working with for the guidance we're trying to put together. And so, again, in addition to what Simon said, that might be another resource. So Metro Sports based.
I will look. Thank you. And thank you, Simon, for your presentation. Can I just also add a comment to your presentation that really alarmed me? Is that true that you can order a loan cane from the R&IB and they post it to you, and are you free to go and basically key yourself and other people around
it's
you?
It's free country.
I didn't
like. Yes, you can. You can buy a walking stick. I mean, how many people do we know who use a walking stick who's not had it fitted properly? It's my granddad, so I'm using that one.
I'm very alarmed to hear
and,
that.
You know, and that's bad for you. But sure, yes, you can.
I thought you can only buy the Simbo cane from the R&IB and they post it to you. But I thought
the R&IB, I believe, do advise you to get training. I'm not saying they just ship it out willy-nilly, but you are at liberty on the website to just...
Yeah. Please, anybody from Essex, please don't get a white cane without speaking to me first. Please don't. A long cane, that just sounds awful.
Mm.
But thank you for your presentation. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Are we? I'm going to take any more questions. You probably have to shout because I can't see you all. Anybody got any questions while Simon's here?
Nobody's
looking at the gallery. I can't see
any. Anybody on the phone, Mary and
phone people, okay? We're on time. We're over time, actually. That's okay.
you after two.
Sorry, there.
I've got a question for you after.
Okay, that's great. Well, I mean, that was great, Simon, and thank you, other Simon, for coming
in. Yeah, thank you to the other Simon for
thank
that.
Thank you. Yeah.
So, I mean, for me, there was a couple of things. For me, as I mentioned earlier, the conditioning was something I haven't quite overlooked it as such. Mm-hmm. But because we're all so keen to get out there, we've got to be careful that maybe some people who may be a little bit left behind, shall we say, who, you know, but again, but the idea of the picnic sounds great, Sheila, because you get out the car, you get to your tables, you might want to walk to the side of the lake or something. You'll work it out, won't you?
Yes.
Yeah, you'll work it out without anybody really knowing, and the people, you know, and there will be people who will probably tell you there and then that they might need a bit of extra help. And if so...
It is never too late to start exercising again. It's a cliche, but it's never too late.
Mm. We do hook into other ones. I mean, Jackie, she's still here. She's on mute. And also Simon from Henshaw's. We don't do these things ourselves, but because we hook into other people's events. That's what I'll do, Simon. I'll have a look on the Knowledge Village and see what's going on. And Jackie, has already hooked into some events, haven't you, Jackie, for our people?
Yes, yeah. Well, I attend the rehab group, so I'm in their conversations about the exercise.
Is the rehab group is the one that is in Vision, run by Visionary? Is it that yes. we And yes. is that something that you're leading, Simon?
It's still facilitating it, yeah.
And I thought that was only for qualified rehab.
It's.
So we can't join, like I'm not.
I think not. No, I think it's. I suppose it's supposed to be a sort of safe space, really.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Jackie has a pleasure.
The things we took. Yeah, yes, it's a very sobering safe space sometimes.
But maybe it would be quite good for maybe set up a similar group for, you know, for rehab, for not rehab workers as such, but also we do rehab as well in our own capacity in certain extent. So maybe it would be good to see what's happening in your world for people who are quite attached to what you do, but not actually.
I think as a future discussion, it might be interesting to get a discussion going about what are rehab worker only tasks and what are not. It's quite a controversial area, but I think there's a degree of common sense versus understanding why boundaries exist. So it's both sides.
Okay.
I mean, that idea, Susie, you mentioned, and Simon, and that this type of audience is what we're talking about. If you did want to run something, you know, three or four times a year, you can hook into our network, Simon, because we would give you an audience. if you do think about such a thing, as Susie said, it's something we would do with small organisations, you know, every now and again. So, yeah, so bear us in mind if something does develop.
Lovely.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you, team, for setting today's up, this session.
Thank you. Who's next? Is it? Thank you, Stuart. Thumbs up from Stuart. You next, Stuart. Is it you next? Or is it?
Me?
No. The in 4 weeks' time. Whose session is it?
Yes, it's Site Concern Worcestershire. Sorry, Tim. It's
Michelle. Are you doing it?
Yeah, funnily enough, I'm doing it, and following on from what Simon was talking today, I've been asked to look at sort of chair exercise, strength and balance, that sort of thing. So that sort of ties in or follows up quite well from what Simon was saying.
Great.
So I'm a qualified fitness instructor, you see, as well. So that was my background prior to this.
So is that a month's time, Misha? You're going to do the...
Yes, yeah.
Oh, great. Well, I should come in my yoga outfit then in case we need to move.
Well, back. I don't know how much we'll do. It might, I don't know. I haven't planned it all yet. I only got told yesterday, so we'll see.
Oh, bless you. That's great. Thank you.
Obviously, Buzz Simon is a welcome to that. So,
that's exercise, not doing any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but we're going to have the same in 2 weeks' time for the apps. So if anybody would like to come back in 2 weeks' time, please do.
So yeah, that's building what Simon said. We got them. One of the things will be how to use that your phone. People who use the Pen Friends, for example. We've got the way to do this on your mobile phone. So that should be interesting. I've never seen this done before, so I hope it works well.
When's that on, Tim?
2 weeks' time. It's the fourth Thursday. It's 2 weeks' time, yes. It's Matt from Nottingham, who's not on the line at the moment. Matt from Nottingham is doing that.
I'll definitely be interested in that.
It will be good. It will be good.
Every second Thursday and every fourth Thursday, 10 o'clock, we will run a session on something or another. That's the plan.
This one's about living well. The other one's about technology.
So I need to leave you, Tim. Is that okay?
Yeah, anyway, I'm going to end it now. We're yakking on about nothing.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks for coming.
Bye. Thank you, everyone. Bye. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Tim.